On today's episode of Higher Learning, we are joined by Florencia Stanfield, the Chief DE&I Officer at Vitesco Technologies. Florencia has such an incredible background, and she says so much great advice and insights on everything from diversity, equity, and inclusion in over 20 different countries, what it's like to interview and bring in great talent into your organization, and why it's important to have friends and people you like to work with if you want to have any type of sustainable job performance and appreciation fulfillment. I know you're going to love this episode of Florencia. I can't wait for you all to listen and get your feedback. Thanks so much. Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Oz Rashid. Today, my listeners, we have a very special guest. We're joined by Florencia Stanfield. She is the Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer at Vitesco Technologies. Florencia, how are you doing today?
Hey, Oz, how are you? I'm great. How about you?
I'm doing awesome. I'm feeling good. It's early in the week. It's been a good week so far, so I cannot complain. Actually, I got to be honest with you. I'm looking out at 75-degree weather, and the ocean is a little bit in the distance. You are located in beautiful Detroit, I believe, correct?
Close to Detroit, so I can't get used to the gray days that we have here, so it's like snowy and rainy and cold and gray, but hopefully getting out of it, so.
Us Florida guys just rubbing it in over here. I'm so sorry. You know what? You call me in the dead of summer and let me know when you're having a beautiful Detroit day and it's raining and I'm humid, and I'll feel just as bad. So let's start here. I want to learn a little bit about your current company, Vitesco, and how you came to join the company.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're a pretty cool company, actually. We're in high tech in the automotive industry, which means that we develop products that are very much like software-based for cars that are either like the traditional technologies around internal combustion engines or electrified vehicles. So electric vehicles or hybrid vehicles. And that's basically the core of what we do. So we work with all the automotive makers, and we're very kind of high tech, hiring a lot of software developers and software engineers. So it's interesting that we compete with like companies that are in the technology space, even if we're in automotive. And we're based out of Germany, so we're a European company. And it's a really cool company to work for.
I love that. I wanted to ask a little bit about the technology. So you're working like on the combustion technologies, the things that all cars have, but as you've moved more into the EV space, is that a recent transformation or is that something that's been in the works and working for a long time?
It's been in the works for some time. Countries and governments and in the United States, even states have different regulations that have been more and more progressive towards electrification of their fleets and of the fleet overall. There are some states that are a little bit more, let's say, forward thinking in these aspects and some others that are a little bit behind. But we do see that all car manufacturers today either have a business unit that's focused on electrification, and you see a lot of, you know, the typical traditional makes of cars that are launching their electric vehicle series. And also we see the surge and the growth of companies that are only electric vehicles, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, we cannot say any brands here, any makes, but we all know who we're talking about. So there's definitely a tendency in the market to go towards electrification, and we're just jumping early in the wave, right?
Well, I'll tell you what, the companies we will not name, I drive one of their cars and it's one of the best things I own. And I'm very appreciative of this movement. Not only is it great for the environment, but just the way that the car drives and all the different unique technologies that come with it. I guess I have Vitesco to thank for that. I think it's awesome. So I'm super, super appreciative. And that's really interesting. So you are the Chief DE&I Officer for Vitesco, and you're supporting 20 countries. And so when I learned that, something that immediately came to mind to me is that DEI standards, I would think from the U.S. and country to country, they differ quite a bit. And I imagine there has to be some level of nuance that comes into play when you're thinking about things from different demographics, what diversity means, standards, priority, ideas. So I'm just interested, with so many different countries and all those differences, how do you manage such a large, I guess the best word is portfolio of countries, and then manage to give a customized, nuanced approach to each country while still having a framework that is kind of what is imperative for the company overall, DE&I standards?
Well, it's complex, as you said, and I think that one of the premises that I stand by is like one size does not fit all, right? That's something that you need to understand when you're managing a global, let's say, center of expertise or discipline like I do. So definitely there's like, as you set for me the keyword framework, right? So you need to have a framework. So you need to understand where you're headed, right? And what are the pillars that are going to support your strategy? And we do have that. So we've identified that we're going to be working on understanding, listening and learning, right? And understanding what our underrepresented communities around the world look like and what they need, right? We're going to be working on developing and retaining talent, which means different things in different countries because of different local laws and demographics, right? We're going to be working on instilling accountability. So how do we make people accountable for this? How do we make people understand that this is more than demographics, than representation, right? How do we make people become, more, let's say, stronger advocates or allies to DE&I? And then last but not least, how do we become role models? How do we instill this aspect of being role models, not only for our employees from a leadership standpoint towards our employees, but also in the, let's say, in the ecosystems where we operate? How do we become these like good neighbors that we want to be, right? Within the industry, within the automotive industry, and also in the communities around the world. So with that framework, right, we establish that framework for all of our countries, and then we let the countries interpret what that means to them. So that means that picture, that framework is going to be interpreted different in China than in India, than in the Czech Republic, than in the US. And that's how you kind of make a, let's say, a directive or a strategy. Kind of you put like meat into it, right? And you execute. So that's basically what we do, right? So again, an underrepresented community in China may be a multi-children family, right? And I always bring that as an example because for us it's like weird, right? But in China, having more than one kid is identified as an underrepresented community. So how do we address the needs of multi-children families in China? In India, there's, a lot of focus in the community that has to deal with people with disabilities. How do we address the needs of the community of people with disabilities in India, and so on and so forth, right? So every country has their nuances, and again, as long as we can place or we can define the strategy for each country under one of those pillars of our overall strategy, it all makes sense. We're all moving in the same direction. And again, one size does not fit all, and I cannot have control over everything. So, once the direction is set, I let people do, which I think is also something that you need to learn, as a global manager. You cannot control it all, right?
Yeah, wow, that's fascinating to me, and learning the nuance in China versus India versus the US, that's awesome. I don't know if you can answer this, but is there a country that you support that really leads the charge around equity and inclusion, maybe at the government level, maybe at a policy level, or maybe that leads to more rigidity? I don't know, but is there one that stands out to you when I say that?
I would say that depends on the country. There's countries that have more of a more, let's say, social democratic approach that are tighter in the things that they require from companies. So they require, certain targets of representation for certain demographics. And that's kind of a bit more limiting in the capacity or of the things that you can do, but you guess you need to abide by those laws and those requirements by the governments. And there's countries where it's a little bit more, let's say, up to the companies to, move towards having within the company a representation of the communities that they serve, right? So there, it depends a little bit on the, policies of each country, and it has a little bit to do also with politics. So it's
Yeah,
different. Different.
I love that. Wow, super fascinating. Another thing is that I have a lot of friends who are chief diversity, equity, and inclusion officers. And one of the things that, after we're maybe having a glass of wine or out to lunch and we're talking about some of the challenges is that sometimes when that role is bifurcated from the organization, right, or it stands alone, that it can be very hard to not be an adjacency to the business, right? Because a lot of times when I look at DEI practices, it's really the responsibility of the business for it to be intrinsic into the business. How do you manage and handle that at Vitesco in particular to make sure that it's part of like kind of the everyday policy and thought process and not just diversity stepping in after the fact and saying, did we make sure we did XYZ?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's a journey, right? It's not like a milestone that you hit and then you're done, right? So this topic about DE&I is so, let's say, it's so broad, right? That you cannot say, okay, I'm done. Like I did this, I'm done. We're good, we're great. So I would say, how do you address that? First of all, you need to embed DE&I within, into your processes and practices, right? And procedures and policy. So then what happens is that, you start having these topics so much so embedded into what you do that you start kind of like incorporating that as part of your, common language. So there's a kind of a process foundational side to it. But for me, the most important and the thing that I'm most passionate about is how do you work with leaders so that they incorporate this as part of their, normal, natural conversations with their teams and their teams with their teams and so on and so forth. So you start kind of cascading this down. And I think that, leadership involvement at the top is critical to be able to kind of move an organization towards a certain, desired image of the future. So I think that for me, having those difficult conversations with leaders at the top have been, critical in, again, in deploying a strategy that actually makes sense, right? And again, a lot of DE&I, there's a lot of association of DE&I with representation, right? And affirmative action plans on kind of the harder side of it. But at the end of the day, when we talk about DE&I, we're talking about building culture, right? We talk about like developing and enhancing and celebrating those behaviors that we want in our leaders that then cascade down to the rest of our organization, right? So we have leaders that are open, honest, like, they're close to their people, they hear their people, they want to have the input of others. Then you're going to have an organization that's eager to provide feedback where people are okay stating their own voice and opinion. So that kind of generates a whole culture, right? So I think the beauty of DE&I has to do with this creation of culture that we enable through the practice of diversity, equity, and inclusion.
That's fantastic. I love that. I mean, and you mentioned leadership development. I know that's an area that you're passionate about. You spend a lot of your career working in that space. You work at a technology company, so you're working with engineering leaders a lot of the time. And a lot of times they're getting these leadership roles because their expertise is in engineering and what they love. And then a lot of times that's not always conducive, or they haven't gotten classical training when it comes to people dynamics. And we all know that's very important as you rise up the chain, especially as you have people reporting to you. How have you tackled that? How has that been something that maybe you address up front, or maybe you assess it? Give me an idea of if you've encountered that and what you've done to kind of overcome it.
Well, I'll tell you this. I love working with engineers. They're amazing. And I've been working with engineers for more than 20 years now, so it's been a while. So that's a good question that you're asking because I did like so naturally that it's hard to kind of, put it into, again, a framework to use that word. I would say that for me, it's not necessarily only engineers or only in this space. I think it's everybody that's put into a leadership role because of their accomplishments from a technical standpoint or as individual contributors has a challenge of now I need to get things done through others, right? And how do I do that? So it's not necessarily only, let's say, restrictive of engineers. What happens with engineers, like to your point or to your question, is that they don't teach like people skills in school. So you graduate from college, you sometimes get into a master's degree or into a PhD, and you don't know how to deal with people. And that's something that is harder maybe for engineers. So I re respect and appreciate them because because of their style, and I'm using stereotypes here, so bear with me. Because of their style, generally, they appreciate what they don't know. The let's say that the skills and the competence that you bring of around things that they don't know much about. So they're eager to learn, they're eager to practice, they want everything like nailed down into a process and the details, and sometimes you can't do that. But generally speaking, they're very much open to accepting and acknowledging that there's not, they don't know everything, right? So that's great about working with leaders that are in the engineering space. And I think that how do I address like each person is a whole world. So we cannot say like there's a general rule. But I would say that for me, it's super important to understand where they come from, right? What is your lived experience so far that got you to this point? How do you think of yourself in terms of the accomplishments that have gotten you here? And what do you think you need to get, to be like, fully performing in this role or getting you into the next one, right? So at the end of the day, working with leaders overall has to do with understanding where they are, what they think of themselves, and helping them bridge the gap, if there is one, right, in terms of their own self-perception and what's real, let's say, what's the perception of others. And help them work towards that. It's not like just showing them, hey, there's a problem here. Look at yourself in the mirror and there's a distorted image, but it's also, we're gonna work on this together. Okay. We're gonna practice this together. You're not gonna be alone in this process. And I think that's been very helpful for many. And this space of confidential, like deep conversation about what's going on. What are your fears? How do you address this? At very high levels, right? We're talking about executives, we're talking about CEOs here. I think that's been valuable. And a lot of people at those levels are respected to the point that people are not genuine with them. So I think authenticity and being able to be transparent and say, hey, I don't know, I don't have all the answers, but let's work on this together, has been very, also very helpful, along the way.
I love it. And you're just setting me up with segues here because you're talking about kind of that initial assessment. And I just think it's when I see you meet a lot of executive coaches, a lot of times they may lean a little bit too much on that framework. Maybe they have like that cookie cutter approach. And we both know that every leader is very, very different, like a snowflake in so many different ways. Sometimes they can be very inaccessible. Do you have an approach just in terms of as you're trying to learn them, or what do you do differently to kind of make that assessment so that you can customize, the approach in terms of development and how you work with them to get the most out?
Well, I don't have a framework that I apply every single time. Okay, it depends a little bit on the leader and the issue that we want to solve, right? Why are we getting together here? Like, what is it that we want to, at the end of the line, what is it that we want to achieve? So that kind of shapes a little bit of the conversation that we have. But in order to get to know them, which is, I think there's a threshold that you cross at some point where like there's like the barriers come down, right? And then the genuine, authentic relationship starts to be built. I think that what I do is to ask them about an imagined future that they can work towards. Like, imagine yourself in your best self. Like, what does that look like? Imagine the best company that you could run. What would that look like? Imagine the best people that could report to you. Who would they be? And how would you be with regards to them? So working again around the images of a possible future. And again, understanding, okay, where I'm at today and where I want to go with these images. I think that's a really, that's a positive approach to the things that we need to work on, right? So again, it's not that I use it. It's kind of a methodology called appreciative inquiry. I use it at sometimes, to start conversations, but again, it depends on the issue that we're trying to solve.
I love that. And I'm sure that the leaders you've worked with have been much better off from their experience in working with you. And I just think it's so smart to take it all differently and customize the approach. And so I love to hear that you're doing that. Now, I want to talk a little bit about hiring because I know you've done tons of hiring throughout your career. You know talent when you see it. I'm sure there's been great hires, there's been some good hires, there's been some hires that you wish you could have back. I want to talk about all those experiences. So let's start here. Do you have a core hiring philosophy for people that you want to bring into your team or into your organization? And if so, what is it?
I would say I'm gonna hire the best skilled person. And that is something that I always bring up because sometimes when you work, around diversity topics and with minorities, people are gonna say by default, well, you're gonna favor those that are in underrepresented communities. And it's not the case. That is not true. I am going to be hiring the best suited candidate, and that is what I push on the company that I work for. We're not going to be favoring anybody because they're part of a minority, right? What we're doing is allowing people from underrepresented communities to have access, right, to these jobs and then be interviewed like everybody else, which is something that maybe in the past didn't happen that often, right? But it doesn't mean that we're going to be hiring somebody because of an identity trait, right, like gender or sexual orientation, right? So I would say hire the best person for the job, hire the most skilled person. And when I say most skilled, and this is the other thing that I like to always stand, kind of point out is look for potential, look for that appetite, look for that capacity to learn quick and deliver in a couple months. It doesn't need to happen a day. This thing about not everybody applying for jobs when they don't fill all the qualifications is real. So, make your job descriptions easy, simple, nimble. So you have a lot of people applying, even if they're not 100% like exactly what you need. And include potential as one of the things that you evaluate when you're thinking about the best skilled person for the job, because the job may be one thing today, but it not necessarily is the same thing and, down the line in a couple of years. So think about that. Okay. Just like try to understand the unwritten rules of how do I identify potential, right?
Yeah, I love that. So you definitely do not fit any stereotypes. I love that you talk about the most skilled person for the role because you're right. That wouldn't be what people would expect to hear from the chief diversity officer of a company. But I think you're absolutely right. And really the way I look at it is that I believe in equality of opportunity, but not equality of outcome. And so at the end of the day, it's on us to create a funnel, to give people the opportunity to interview, to give people the opportunity to show that they can fulfill that capacity when they haven't been given it in the chance. Because it's when you're looking at these repressed groups or you're looking at a historically disenfranchised group, it's a lot of times that they haven't even had the same opportunities to achieve the same things. And so to be able to lift that up is of critical importance. But at the same time, to have an meritocratic business, to have a business that is skills focused and talent based, right? After you lift that opportunity up and try to give it to everybody, now it's incumbent upon you to hire the best person for the role. And that's how you have the best business outcomes. And that's how you become a leader in your industry. So I certainly love that. And I think that is the right way to go about it. And I appreciate you saying that. What about a memorable interview experience? If I ask you to remember one, maybe you were interviewing somebody or you were going into interview, does any come to mind?
I think that for me, the most significant or relevant interviews have been those that were more of conversations rather than interviews, right? So you did have this approach of, let's have a conversation. Give me your thoughts on this or that, or I can disagree with the interviewer and say, well, you know what, maybe not so much because of this. So I think those have been always the most productive conversations and interviews that I've been part of, either as a, you know, as an interviewee or as somebody interviewing. And it has to do with this capacity to get out of that meeting having some value added from both sides, right? For the candidate, it is learning more about the culture, the company, the job. But then for the person interviewing, not only knowing the person better, but also, you know, saying, hey, this person made me think, right? They asked this question that was so smart. I had never thought about it this way, right? So interviews are processes where you can take away things that are, you know, other than the typical things that you want to take away, right? I think those are the ones that I remember the most. And that is the experience that I always try to deliver for the candidates that I interview.
Have you ever done the interviews where you're maybe doing a lunch interview or you're doing an interview with a dinner and the spouse, or you're kind of taking them out of kind of the traditional interview environment to more develop that rapport and relationship? Have you had any success with that in the past?
Yes, I have. And it's a way to understand, you know, how a person operates outside, let's say, of the typical work environment. It's interesting because, as a, you know, an experienced interviewer, you take note of different things that happen during the process that are not necessarily the questions that you ask, right? Mm-hmm. So, of course, it's interesting. I would say that always you need to be very self-aware of the biases you bring to the process, right? In terms of, well, this is a way that I pick up, you know, the silverware and this person is not doing it. Oh my goodness, this is terrible. So, you know, kind of keep yourself in check, right? So that you don't over-dimension, if that's a word. I'm sorry. I'm going to let you know.
I love it. We're inventing it. It had over-dimension. It's a new word now.
So you don't, like, you know, take things out of proportion. And that's something that it doesn't matter if you're like taking somebody out for dinner or with a spouse or whatever, it's important to keep yourself in check so that you're asking the questions, understanding where you're coming from when you're asking the questions. So the things that you're pointing out or noticing about the way that the person is answering, right? So there's always, when you're interviewing, there's always this, let's say, very, very easy bias to fall into around, oh, this person is answering the way that I would. This person looks like that. This person has the same accent or comes from the same school or whatever. So be very cautious about the type of things that you're considering by favoring someone, right? Like when you're favoring someone, it needs to be because of their potential, their skills, their experience. But, you know, keep an eye on yourself. And I think that's super important.
Yeah, I think there's some affirmation bias there. This person worked at a company that I respect. They went to the same school I did. They have this similar experience. And I think it's a very natural thing for people to want to hire people that are like them or have had experiences like them. And that can always get you into trouble. So I agree with you. You've always got to be checking your biases if you're interviewing at a restaurant or on a Zoom or whatever it may be.
You know, something that I always do, and this is like eye-opening for a lot of people that I say this to, and it's, for me, it's like super obvious, but you know, when you're in an interview process and you're interviewing many candidates, right? Take note of the people that make you the most uncomfortable. Ooh. Because generally speaking, the people that make you the most uncomfortable are the ones that are the least similar to you. The people that make it super easy. It's, you know, it's not that we're going to be confronting the candidates, not at all. But the people that think very different from you are the ones that are going to say, oh, you know, it generated this like uneasiness in me. Take note of those people, because if you're trying to bring diversity to your teams, you know, diversity of thought, that is always a great thing to know. Who are the people that, again, make me learn, ask the right questions, and also maybe a little bit uneasy because they're thinking in such a different way than I am, right? So that's also something that I try to do, and it generally works.
Yeah, that is a really interesting framing. I'm somebody who spends a lot of time thinking about interviewing. I've never actually heard that before. I really like that. And you're right. Next time I'm uncomfortable in an interview or I'm like, I'm not sure about these answers, I'll try to reframe it and see. Maybe this is going to be somebody that thinks differently. It can help us innovate, can bring a lot of different great things to the table. I love that line of thought. Do you have a favorite question that you like to ask in interviews?
Something that I do like to ask, let me think. I would say is, what do you need to be successful here? Like, tell me about what you what we would need to do as a company to make you successful here. And I remember that, this is something that I was asked when I joined the company by my leader, the CEO of North America. And I was kind of not used to it. And I was like, wow, that's a great question to ask. Like, I didn't know the answer, to be honest. So, when she asked me this, I was like, I don't know. I don't know what I need to be successful here. I don't know. I don't know the culture, I don't know the company. But she was asking about me. She wasn't asking about me fitting in. She was asking about me. So, I love asking that question. What do you need to be successful? And the
Wow.
answer can be anything, right? And I think it's super deep if you can ask that and you can get a, a good answer.
Yeah, and I think another interesting thing is that sometimes it can be disqualifying too, because maybe the things that they need are things that your company is not great at or you don't have available, and that gives you a good insight into this person. What are they going to be when they're working here? So I think that's a really good question. Now, listen, we all miss on people too, right? So is there anything when you've missed on somebody where you've looked back and there's a theme or something you wish you would have done differently?
Yeah, I think that, again, going back to the bias question, I think that the times that I missed were earlier in my career, and they had to do with like my own biases that I hadn't processed that well. So, the things again, again, affirmation bias, or this person looks like me, talks like me, one of the same school, the things that I brought up a little bit ago, in action, right? Without thinking about them that, back then. And now again, like, after a few more turns around the sun, I realized that maybe the interviews that didn't go that well, or the people that I hired that weren't necessarily, the best fit for the job, had to do with, me seeing myself in these people, and maybe myself in that role wouldn't have been successful. So I made a, I made a mistake there.
I love that. One of the things that I believe is that I think actually that candidates and interviewing is one of the most underrated forms of marketing that we have as a company. And I don't know that everybody looks at it that way, but I think about, especially when you're in a bigger company and you have a bunch of applicants and you have a bunch of people interviewing for multiple different roles throughout your company, the experience that they have a lot of the time, good or bad, is going to say a lot about do they want to work there? Would they recommend to their friends to work there? And sometimes even would they use the products and services of the company? So I always think about that. I'm interested from a candidate experience perspective. Is there anything that you or Vitesco does that tries to give them an idea of like a realistic job preview? What it would be like to work at the company during the interview process?
We're very, like, I'll be honest with you, we're pretty traditional in the way that we're interviewing. So it's not that we do necessarily do anything that's super, let's say, cool or different. We're part of the automotive industry, so that kind of gives you a little bit of yeah, I would say, of an idea of how we interview. We do try to be very transparent and honest in the way we interview, right? So the way that we're talking here would be the way that I would be talking to a candidate, and the way that our recruiters would be talking and reaching out to candidates. So we do a little bit of active sourcing, and we do go to like specific, events or specific places where we want to, definitely push and bring in more people from, different communities. So we do that, participate in, fairs, but it's more of the traditional side, I would say. But we try to be very transparent in who we are, what we do, and the things that you will find with us, and the things that you want, right? Like, we have I would say the 100,000 advantages of working for a German company, which is amazing, but it's also different, right? It's different from, from working for an American company. So again, I think one of the things that defines us is, transparency, let's say an informal way of connecting, right? We're always available. You can reach out to us anytime. There's no secrets here. You can have our emails. And we're pretty agile. So from the moment that you interview until the moment you get hired, the whole process is probably going to take not longer than, 3 weeks. So that's really cool. And we always get back to everybody. So again, this image of we're not super creative in the way that we do it, but we are who we are, and we're going to show you that. We're not going to be, pretending we're something we're not, and then getting you disappointed that you join us, right? So you like it, great. If you don't, it's okay. This is like a dating exercise. If you like me, it's all right. We can move on. If you don't, it's okay too.
I literally used so many dating analogies that people just roll their eyes because I think there's a lot between matching a person and matching a person to a company. And, I don't want to overly generalize or stereotype, but you are a German company. I'm half German, so I think I can get away with this. It sounds like your process is punctual, efficient, and engineered for success. So There's probably some of those like kind of cultural tenets that come out into your interview process based on what you just said. I'm interested, can you take me behind the curtain of how you interview, just in terms of, is there a technology that you rely on? Are you writing notes? Are you trying your best to be in the moment? Like, what is the way that you capture the feedback, or how do you make sure that? Because a lot of times what happens is somebody, like you interview somebody and then you got like a couple other meetings and then you're trying to think back to the experience, there can be some lost in translation stuff there. So I'm interested on what you do to kind of keep in check, document, make sure you're aligned in terms of the interview.
No, and it's a great question. I think that's one of the tricks when you're trying to do inclusive interviewing, right? It is try to have the same type of questions for everybody. So if you're going to be interviewing a bunch of people, ask them the same kind of questions so that you can compare apples to apples. If you're going to be asking different things, because again, you got, sidetracked by a candidate that said, shared something super cool, and you spend 30 minutes talking about that, and then you don't have time to kind of go to back to the rest, you're not going to have the ability to then compare what skills are, from candidate to candidate. So having kind of a structured approach to the questions that you're asking, and that can be, for us particularly, we defined a couple years ago the cultural traits that we wanted to convey and let's say include our employees to be kind of advocates for. And that's what based like our interview process and our interview structure is based on those cultural traits that we want to, again, kind of build and establish within our workforce. So we're asking questions around those topics, and all the questions we have like a sample questionnaire for each of those pillars that we have around culture. And all the questions are that when you have X amount of candidates, we are asking the same questions to each of them, and then we're ranking them and rating them. So again, we try to avoid bias in the process, and by asking similar questions to all of your candidates, you're minimizing your capacity or your ability to bias your decision, right? So that's what we do to keep it focused on skills and keep it simple.
I love you saying that. That I'm so appreciative of you saying it. It's from preaching to the choir here, essentially. We're building software that's specifically for hiring managers. We want to make hiring more certain. We want to make it a less of a burden, a better experience. And one of the things that we do, to your point, is the interview is structured from a timing perspective, from the questions you're asking. Because if you're asking a candidate, one candidate, 15 different questions than the other candidate, then how are you really comparing them, right? You're not, like you said, you're not, comp and it's one of a simple mistake that a lot of managers make, right? Because a lot of times people are shooting from the cuff and thinking, I'll do this, or I've asked this question this time and I want to ask this time, or I've asked the same questions I've always asked. It's so important that you're giving everybody kind of a very similar experience and standards so that when you're making a decision, you can do that. I believe our software is going to help do that, but I'm so glad you said that because I find it to be super, super paramount and a simple thing that I think a lot of managers mess up on. I want to take a little bit of a different direction. I want to learn a little bit more about kind of a little day of the life here. So I'm going to ask, is there anything you're working right now on at Vitesco that you're really excited about, that you're really juiced about?
Yeah, well, yeah, there's always something. So we are in the process of getting our DE&I report for last year ready. It's the first time we're going to go global. Until last year, we're a company that's only 10 and a half years old. So you need to understand that we're like early in our journey, right? So we're going to be launching our DE&I report coming up in March. That's before our shareholder meeting that's going to happen in April. So that's exciting. That's the first time again that we're going to do it for, all of our countries, our main operations around the world. And it's good. It's a lot of work. It's good. We're always working around how, building our network of not only employee resource groups around the world. And that means that, we did a campaign in China in December, between November and December, and we got about 700 new people joining our ecosystem of employee resource groups, which is great, a great hit for one country in a couple months. So building that, ecosystem of people that are connected to DE&I topics, again, generates continuity of all of our efforts, and also includes people in this like bottom up approach. So it's not only working with leaders, but it's also working with people so that people feel that they have, let's say, a home within the company, and they can raise their voice and they can say, hey, this is not working for me because of this and that. So being able to again make this a kind of a democratic approach, right? With a top-down approach, but also a bottom-up approach, for me is always a passion of mine. So that's great. That's something that's ongoing, and yeah, it's never gonna stop. So might like it, right?
You'll have to let us know how that grades out, and good luck in the April meeting for the shareholders. But sounds like a lot of positive things going on, so that's super exciting. We like to a lot of times look at an old LinkedIn post and ask you what you were thinking when you posted this. So I did not prepare you for this, but it was only a month ago, so hopefully you remember. Who said work and life are not integrated? I've made some of the best friends of my life at work, those that will be by my side in good times and bad. Thank you for all your unconditional support and for allowing us to be in our true selves around each other. Life is definitely better with y'all in it. You know who you are, even those that aren't in the pic below. So I love this concept of work-life integration. For me, some of my best friends I work with, I work from home and take emails and do it. Like, these things don't stop or start. I'm just kind of doing all of them at all the time. So walk me through that.
Yeah, well, it's kind of my life too. I work from home. What you see is not a background. That's actually my office. I do work every now and then. I go down to the office in suburban Detroit. I live in mid-state in Michigan, so I'm a couple hours north of my office. And I also have a workspace in Regensburg in Germany. So I kind of, depending on what's around or what's up, I'm working either or. And again, just because of our culture, right? We try to be fresh, we try to be close to people, we try to be open. That's enabled me. And again, this like huge ecosystem of people that are connected to D&I, that's enabled me to build like amazing relationships with people and different functions in finance and purchasing and the commercial sales side, you name it, right? So all those people in that picture, none of them are in the D&I office. They're all from different functions. And I feel very blessed and very lucky to have been able to build those relationships, because I am a true believer that you need to love what you do, right? And if you build these relationships and these friendships at work, then it makes it all so much easier. It's so nice to be working for friends with friends, right? So I know it's difficult. Sometimes it's just work and you cannot get personal, and there's all these different let's say walls that we build around ourselves, right? But if you're able to start like tearing those walls down a little bit and start sharing a little bit of yourself, you're gonna realize that everybody around you is just people, right? And it's great. And it's great to have relationships beyond what you need to do or the tasks, right? So I would encourage everybody to try and build that, because it makes life so much better, right?
It's an absolute deal breaker for me if I don't have it. If I don't have multiple people that I enjoy being with, both on a personal and professional basis at work, then I'm gonna go find somewhere where that exists. Because the minute that I'm just thinking about only doing my job, coming home and going to bed and waking up and doing it again, like that can't sustain for me. That doesn't fuel me. That doesn't energize me. It's all about the people at the end of the day. So I certainly appreciate that. I see a lot of books back there. Do you have one that you'd maybe recommend, or maybe the last book you read that you want to bring up?
Oh, let me take a look. What would I do? What would I recommend? Well, I'm a big fan of Adam Grant. I don't know if you know him,
Do.
but you probably do.
Yeah, think again. I
Yeah.
just read that a few months ago. Really good.
I was gonna recommend that one, but there's a couple others. So yeah, Adam Grant, you should check it out. And if you don't, like, he's amazing. I do a lot of reposts of thoughts that he shares. So if you want to follow me on LinkedIn, you have a lot of material there. And he has a couple others that are really good, so I would recommend.
I'm a big fan of Adam Grant. I will definitely do that. You know, I found, you know, I don't know if you'd want me to say this, but I found out somebody recently had him speak at an engagement. It was like, I'll just put it this way, mid six figures was the deal to come talk there. So he has done well for himself in terms of the following and community he's built. But he's a brilliant guy and has really good books and a really great way of delivering his thoughts. So I really appreciate that. Last question. If you could offer young Florencia, early in career Florencia, one bit of advice, or maybe somebody who's earlier in their career listening to this podcast, that you didn't know then, but that you know now, what would it be?
Early Florence, yeah, I would say build relationships. Back to the point of the friendships that you were talking about. Well, not everybody needs to be a friend, but a lot of work happens through and with the connections that you make. So it's more than your job. Your job is important. You need to get things done. Otherwise, you're not going to be doing good. But take some time to build relationships, to connect with people, to get to know people, right? And that's going to help you along the way. And for me, for somebody that's starting their career, find mentors. Find people that can teach you, right? You don't know it all, right? You're just starting and you want to get places. So find the people that can listen to you and can teach you and can help you in that process. So that would be my advice to myself.
That's really good advice. So, Florencia, I really appreciate you coming on. I'm excited to follow along with Vitesco and all the great things that you're doing over there. I appreciate you taking a little time to join the podcast, and I know everyone's going to love this episode. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure, Oz. Pleasure to meet you. Take care.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.